With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. I'm your host, Scott Colnut, and with me today is JJ Reynolds, Head of Marketing and Analytics at Media Authentic. And we're going to be discussing getting comfortable with data analysis. Welcome to the podcast, JJ.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Scott.
No problem. I'm looking forward to discussing this topic. It's a hot topic for us in our agency. So I'm really looking forward to learning a little bit more about how you adapted your career, how you learned the data analysis skills that you have, and how you apply them today. Getting us started, I'd love to know a little bit more about your journey to where you are today. So I know you have a background as a videographer. Talk me through that journey from being a videographer to your position now as a head of marketing and analytics.
Yeah, so I started out back in the day as a young lad. I would love to play around, mess with videos, making content with friends and all that kind of stuff. And then figured out I could make money from it, making promotional videos for mostly wineries. So I was actually shooting lots of videos, most kind of weekends while in university, and making some pretty good money actually in university shooting videos for wineries. The biggest problem that we ran into, though, is that once I made the video, it was what do you do with this video? It was the next question that the wineries would ask. And I'd be I don't know. That's not my problem. I was hired to make the video. And so then basically it progressed from that to be hey, you can push this boost button on Facebook. There's this thing that they launch called the boost button. And then you can hit that and it goes to other people. I'm hey, you're a local winery. You can just target 20 miles around you, right? There's discovering what the internet marketing world is. Basically, after that, ended up getting a job at an agency where I was kind of running ads, doing some of the content creation and things like that. But basically, always came back to the conversation of get a new client. The client would be oh my goodness, this is amazing. You guys are running my ads or running the content creation, etc. But then 3 months would go by and they'd be what are you guys doing again? Is this actually making a difference? Or were these sales from our event that we ran or from the other piece that we did? And so it always came back to showing the numbers. And as running Google ads or Facebook ads or any of the ads, you'd be look at these reports, look at this. And then the client is I don't know what that means. What is a CPM? What is a CPL? And so then I just basically dove into it. I don't fully understand how these numbers got here, and just kept going deeper and deeper and deeper until I was this is a service that people need to just have someone to help them with their numbers. And that's when Media Authentic, I started that, and the rest is history.
You were talking about the video creation part there. What year are we talking roughly that you started that?
2013-ish. Okay. So about a decade ago now.
Yeah, a decade or so going through this journey. And do you still undertake any videography at all?
Just for our own marketing. Yeah. More of I get to have the fun of making fun stuff.
Yeah. And it sounds like there was a lot of on-the-job learning. So you were getting these questions from clients that it sounds to me like you've gone through this process of create the videos at one point, then learning how to promote them, and then learning a little bit more about the reporting, analysis, and data side. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's pretty much the 10-year journey of what you do like on a cyclical cycle in a week for most companies of like where you make content, you then analyze it, and then you hopefully improve it. It just took me 10 years to figure that out.
And when you started to get those questions about how is this performing, was that exciting to you because you were intrigued and you wanted to know at the time? Could you remember how you felt about that?
I think what was a little different about my journey of it is that I was always a creator for a purpose as opposed to like an artist, which I'm not like knocking any artists that are like, let me just make this beautiful thing. But I was like, what do you want? Let me make it. What are you trying to do? And like, let me just create this thing. So like, whenever that would be, I was very much less an artist. And a lot of my friends who were like, I say true videographers were more of like the artist type of like, let's make this pretty thing. And I was like more of the person who would say, hey, what do you want? Let's make this and deliver it and then get you to be the happiest client so we get more people. So that was I was definitely more business minded as a videographer when I was doing that, as opposed to kind of the artist side of things.
That makes sense. And how did you learn? So talk me through your, I guess, experience in learning data analysis. And you mentioned there 2013 is when you started to create videos. When did your data analysis journey begin?
Yeah, just shortly after that. So basically, I was creating videos, doing that kind of stuff, got a job at an agency shortly after. And then from that point on, I was pretty much into like the measurement side of things as a whole. And when like the data analyst, right, everybody like says, hell yeah, an analyst of what does the data analyst do? And like, for me, like we as like a company are like, we don't care about the analyst, like the, like an analyzing the data. And I say that very loosely of like, what, they don't care about it, is that most of the time, like analyzing something doesn't give you like an action to take. It mostly just gives you like, hey, this is up by 3%. And you're like, well, was it supposed to be up by 3%? Or was it supposed to be like 20%? Our profit margin's 8%. And you're like, was it supposed to be 30? Like, so oftentimes like analysts like get like a bad rep for just being like, hey, like this is the thing. All right, off to the races. See you later. We like to say, hey, we like work with people to create a story out of it so that you know what the expectation was. You have an idea about that. And then like you kind of build an entire journey of what you expect so that you can find where to take the action as opposed to just someone spitting out numbers to you that don't make that much sense.
That makes sense. So it sounds like that you started with expectation management.
Yeah. Like it's the expectation of what do you, whenever you do anything in marketing, right? Whether it's posting a new homepage or making a Super Bowl commercial, what do you expect to happen? And then measuring your benchmarks and like KPIs and all those fancy things against that then gives you actions to take. Whereas if you had zero expectations, you end up in like a downward spiral of like, we're just going to do this. Well, like, what do you expect to happen?
What reporting solutions did you start with? Are you talking Google Analytics, Facebook Analytics, or Ad Manager? What platforms were you using?
Yeah, it started out with the basic stuff of kind of just looking at the Facebook. Right. You started out running ads as like Facebook person, like you're like, all this data shows up in Business Manager, but how does it show up there? Yeah. Right. Like, how does it get there? How does it know what's happening? So then from that point, you say, okay, let me just say, like, let me take a little looky loo at like Google Tag Manager to see how this pixel is being set up. And then you get one step deeper and to say, okay, we need Google Analytics now to see the on page performance and the last click attribution. And then we want to go one step deeper and then get both of those data sources into a single report. I mean, now we're using Google Looker Studio, right? Mm-hmm. So this, like, the progression just kept going down this path. And as I asked more questions, I realized that more and more companies weren't. Either they were asking these questions in like the wrong way of just looking at like, hey, how much do we spend, as opposed to kind of building that story around it. Mm-hmm. I like had that experience from media buying and then slowly kind of got smaller and smaller and smaller to like now we just work with the numbers.
It's interesting because you mentioned about asking questions there. I think that knowing the right questions to ask, being curious, and actually just asking the questions that are top of mind is one of the most important skills for data analysis and being a data analyst or a marketing analyst. Did that part of asking the right questions and just asking questions, was that natural for you?
Yeah, that was one of the things that came the most natural to me. I think it stems from like kind of the content creation background where it's like working with people and working with cameras and kind of matching apertures and all these things that you have to try kind of, what's my expectation when I put the aperture at 1.4 and the shutter speed at 200th of a second? Like, I expect the photo to be like slightly overblown, right? A little washed out. Like, click. Oh, hey, it didn't work. Right? Like, that's like the story of every person who starts like playing with manual settings inside of like that. And then it's, as long as you can apply that into the real world of, like, I say real world loosely, of like analytics and like marketing, that's what people oftentimes are missing, is like, what did you expect to happen when you did this thing? And if you can write that down when you do it, it makes reporting on that 1,000 times easier.
So what were the hardest parts for you to learn when it comes to data analysis? Because there are different skills involved in comparison to videography and marketing. It sounds like you had a really good foundation in your ability to ask questions, your curiosity. But was there anything else that you remember specifically having to learn, whether it was a platform or a skill or a framework?
I think the hardest thing to like wrap your head around, and for me it was as well, is like knowing the why those numbers exist. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you're looking at Google Analytics and it says, oh, you had 10,000 sessions this week. Well, what is a session? Like, what is it? How is that defined? How do you know you're not overcounting or undercounting those sessions? Did you do like multiple domains, right? So kind of understanding the reason why those numbers exist, how they get there. Like, if you have all those pieces, how do they get there? How does it work? And what do you expect? Like, that was the hardest part, because there's a lot of overlap of technical and strategy at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's learning the data collection techniques. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think that's the one of the harder parts, is understanding the why behind it, because it's so easy to smash buttons all day long until you have something that looks like it should be correct, but it might not be correct.
And 10 years on, so, you know, I look at data analyst and marketing analyst roles now, and I see requirements for programming languages like R and Python. And I've worked with many marketers who don't have those skills, who are actually really good marketing or data analysts. Have you come across this? Do you think that you need to have those skills to be a marketing analyst in today's environment?
No, I don't think you need, like, it's becoming more and more technical. Yeah. It used to be where you could just like drag and drop, click buttons, and bam, you get your answer. It's getting more and more convoluted. Now you kind of have to know some level of like SQL,
yeah,
like at a base. Then you might want to know a little bit of how to like understand the basics of what's happening with Python. You definitely have to know some level of like JavaScript and the data collection side. And then it really is helpful to know HTML so that you can debug something on a page and know if it's the right element that you're looking at. Like, so those are kind of the main pieces. But at the end of the day, I think the best marketing measurement analyst type of person is the person who can like understand the business and ask the best possible questions. Because honestly, like, most of the time, the like all the like coding stuff, all the pieces like that don't really make the biggest impact if you don't have really good questions.
Have you had to train any of your team on that aspect of asking questions? Because it sounds so natural to you. I'm thinking about the people out there that maybe it's not as natural to. And I'm thinking that perhaps you've worked with people in your team where that aspect of just overcoming that, maybe anxiety of putting yourself out there and asking questions, that curiosity, which I think is fundamental. It sounds like you agree it's fundamental to be a good data analyst. Any advice that you've got for those people about like how to ask the right questions?
Oh, yeah. So this is my favorite, because we work with clients on this, because we work with like marketing directors, marketing VPs of like really big companies. And they'll ask a question that like might be a standard question that they think they need to answer for. Mm-hmm. But my favorite thing is an acronym that I've coined, and I call it WAGDI. And like, what are you going to do about it? So if I tell you the answer to this question that you have, what are you going to do about it? And that's my favorite thing, is like saying like, what are you going to do about it if I tell you this? So that's for funny. Example, just for everybody who's listening with me in your earballs, is say you, for example, did like an analysis and your CEO or director was like, let's do an analysis by zip code shipping and the rain and see if it like if it rains, like, does that affect our sales? Mm. Right. And you find out that when it rains more than 4 inches in a 72 hour period, you just go off the rail. Like, your shop is just crushing it. Okay. Mm. So what are you going to do about that? Make it rain more? Right. Like, if you could make it rain, it's a much better business, I think, than probably whatever widget you're selling. Yeah. And so that's like the thing. Like, you could find, like, you could spend hours doing some, like, APIs to get all the data from the Weather Channel and figuring out, like, which zip codes it rained in. Did it rain enough? Now you cross that with this number of sales we had. And then were we promoting anything there to, like, get those outliers out of the way? But, like, at the end of the day, what are you going to do if I tell you that you got 3 times more sales when it rained?
Yeah, I think that's such an important aspect of data analysis. It's, you know, in my mind, I'm kind of framing it or summarizing it as the ability to know when a question is actually going to give you an answer that you're going to apply in some way. I think that's one of the downsides, actually, to be an analyst, and maybe one of the most difficult things, is that you can be so curious about so many things, but actually, in reality, what are you going to apply from your learnings? And if you're not going to apply anything, if you're not, as you said, if you're not going to do anything about it, that discipline of knowing when to step back and actually say, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole because there's no need to do it, is probably one of the best skills that you can learn, particularly early in your career, I think.
Yeah. And I think just to summarize that for, like, an action point for anyone listening, mm. is there are only two types of real questions. There's what questions and how questions. The what questions are like, what happened? Like, how many sales did we have? What occurred? How many people saw the page? How many page views? Like, that's what happened, right? And then there's how questions of how did that happen? Of, did you run Facebook ads and the Facebook traffic is the one that are driving this? Did you have a new agency that was testing traffic and was split testing pages? And that's why you have double in these two different URLs, right? Mm-hmm. So there's only what questions and how questions. The why questions are where usually a human has to get involved. And that's where, like, the marketing director, the marketing person has say, oh, wow, like, we're trending up in this. Like, why is that happening? Like, that's where we want to say, oh, it's because we just spent $250,000 in Facebook ads for lead gen. That's why we have all these leads. Like, yeah. That is where you have to know, like, why is it happening? Or why are we doing this, is where you have to kind of have that human level, because you can't just feed numbers into for numbers' sake. You have to have those what questions, the how questions, and then the why is where people start to get involved.
On this topic of knowing the questions to ask and the questions not to ask, are there any other common pitfalls that you would recommend marketing analysts to avoid? So things that you see in either your clients or your peers, your team, where you kind of scratch your head and you're like, oh no, please don't focus on that because it's going to be a waste of your time.
The biggest thing is, like, seeing people ask very specific questions. Like, for example, if you added a new footer to your website, right? Like, mm-hmm. did that make a difference? And I was like, well, what were you trying? Like, were you trying to get something? Like, what is difference? Yeah. Right? Like, yes, there's a difference. The page is now purple at the bottom. Ta-da, it's different, right? But, like, you want to start saying, like, what are we trying to do? And if you don't know what you're trying to do, it's so hard to work with any marketing person. Yeah. And that's what we often, like, the companies that we work with, if their marketing team knows what they're trying to do, like, we can rock their world because we can kind of be one step ahead of them of, like, what question they're going to ask. And it is amazing. And I think that's where you can really get into a sync. If you have a team that you know what they're trying to do, and as an analyst or as a marketing support or however you, if you're a person who does this to work with numbers, if you can kind of pace them and say, okay, we're trying to do this. Here's what happened last week. Here's what we expect to happen next week. And you can just get into a really good jive with a marketing team who knows what they're trying to do and to help them improve at every step. So that's, like, a kind of problem and also solution in one little soundbite there for you.
Yeah, it reminds me of, in conversion rate optimization, how I've seen this in different conversion rate optimization management systems and websites, particularly, I think, Growth Hackers comes to mind, like making sure that you have a hypothesis tied to each of your conversion rate optimization experiments. And essentially, the principle of what you're saying is exactly the same. It's, if you're going to make a change to your website, have a hypothesis in mind. What do you expect this change to make? And is it one of those things that's actually worth analyzing or not? For example, there are going to be things that you fundamentally change, maybe because they're just bugs, things that don't work correctly on your website. So you might not actually assess the impact of some changes. It really comes down to what we talked about at the beginning. What is your expectation of this change? What is your hypothesis? If you have one, great. Maybe you can measure against it. But if you don't and you're asking that question afterwards, it's probably a sign that it's not something that's useful to measure.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And what we want to do is we always want to try to capture as much information that you know where to go find the answer to the questions. Mm. And like that's kind of where a good team comes into play, is that they've started on the data collection piece before the question was asked, so that when the question is asked, you're not having to restructure the entire world. Like, you already have all the information. You have to re-kind of configure your question and reporting system to get that answer to get back to work.
You mentioned the word human at some point, and it just struck me that I've had conversations in our team about utilizing AI assistance or technology in different reporting solutions to raise marketing insights. Do you use any kind of AI-driven insights in the tools that you're using, or do you avoid them altogether?
Yeah, it's one of those, I think now more than ever, it's one of those questions that we have to just keep asking ourselves is how can we utilize this new, like I say new, relatively new technology of AI or machine learning or whatever those pieces are. And we use it somewhat, like most of the time our team kind of serves as that currently, where the AI like algorithms will kind of serve as anomaly detection more or less. And I think that's kind of what they are, is like anomaly detection of like this last week you had 1,000, this week you have 1,500. It's a 50% increase. Were you expecting a 50% increase? Yeah. Right. And that's where, if you have enough information, I think it has the potential in the future. Like, we've tried to play around with a few custom things where we feed in custom data sets to an owned AI to output insight. But at the current moment, it's usually not that helpful. A little bit of training, and then you would find the answer faster than reading the statement.
I can tell you're a natural storyteller and you focus on the story of data, which again, I think makes for a fundamentally good data analyst. But I am interested in knowing what you consider to be like the perfect structure of a marketing insight. Are you able to talk through that? What makes a perfect marketing insight, and how do you articulate that to clients?
Oh, yeah. I love this question, because when I start with the end first, is usually the end is a report, right? It's a pretty visualization usually that's going to marketing directors most of the time, sometimes marketing VPs, depending on what level that we're working with. And I tell our team, the goal is that the action jumps off the page. The action to take should jump off the page at that director, at that VP, whoever it might be. That's the goal. Working back from that is, how do we get to that, right? How do we get to an action that jumps off the page to take, right?
Yeah.
And so what kind of our process is, and how I would suggest other people to do this, is you start with just saying how many people saw the thing that we're looking at, right? Or that we're trying to do. So let's just say, for example, we are running like a marketing campaign for like selling a new fancy water bottle that keeps your water cold for 6 weeks, right? It's really fancy. You'd probably be drinking it faster, but that's the marketing that we're doing. So what you want to say is like, okay, how many people saw this messaging? Like, how many people saw it? How many people stuck around to read the above the fold content, right? So you're starting to like kind of pace out the story of what the page is supposed to do, or whatever marketing that you have is supposed to do. So, hey, they hit the page loaded. The website did its job. It loaded the page. Double thumbs up. We've got the first step done. Next step is the above the fold content, right? So maybe people are supposed to stick around for at least 7 seconds to read the above the fold content. Then people are supposed to, right, kind of pacing out our expectation, is go view the product images and the product video, right? That's the next step. Then they're supposed to read the reviews, which we put conveniently right below that. And then they're supposed to hit add to cart, right? So that's kind of like what we expect the person we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of benchmark those out, you now have an optimization that you could clearly see. 1,000 people hit the page, 700 people stuck around for 7 seconds, 400 people viewed the product images, 100 people viewed the reviews, and 50 people clicked add to cart. you now have a 0.5% page efficiency rate. Where'd the biggest fallout happen? People going to the reviews, right? So maybe that's not the best move. So you can easily see kind of like visual, like audially, not the easiest to see, but if you have like a little funnel thing for every individual product page you have, you can clearly see A, which product pages are doing the best as far as getting people to move to that next step. And then B, where you need to improve things. Like, wow, our reviews really suck at getting people to move to add to cart. Maybe we should not put the reviews there and put like a quote from a celebrity and a testimonial from somebody really, really famous. And so that kind of process of looking at your data collection of saying, what is the purpose of this page or the purpose of any marketing content that we have? More than just like get sales, but like what's the purpose of the next step? The page loaded. Now what? They read the above the fold. How do we know if they did that? They then engage with the product videos or whatever it might be. So I used it like an e-commerce kind of example there, but that works for anything. We've worked with sales teams who have call setting expectation where you book a call, then you have a call with a rep. They send you a custom order. The custom order, like you can kind of benchmark out every single one of those steps. And if you have that expectation of I expect 70% of people to continue, 30%, 20%, 10%, 1%, now you have a much more granular way of improving things.
And I'm thinking about bringing this to life. The story aspect of what you've just said makes sense to me. And now I'm interested in like the execution. So do you have any favorite tools or software that you would recommend to listeners? Or is this something that you build in-house, your reporting solutions? What helps you bring this to life?
Yeah, so we use mostly like 80% is kind of the Google suite of tools.
Yep.
So this is looking at Google Analytics, Google Tag Manager, Google BigQuery, Google Looker Studio. Those kind of four will get you, I'd say most companies under $100 million, that will rock your world. You're good to go.
Yeah.
Like, no need to invest in some fancy AI tool yet, right? Once it comes out and I can, if someone's listening and has a fancy AI tool that wants to like send me a demo, let me know because I'm happy to change my tune. But right now, that free suite of tools and investing in the people of them as opposed to an expensive tool seems to be the best method that we would recommend.
Yeah, I asked you a question about pitfalls, and actually it sounds like that's one of them is seeking a tool that will automate or give you marketing insights as opposed to putting in this work to ask the right questions and utilize the free tools that are available. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, exactly. Like invest in the questions and the people and the thought process, because the AI tools that I've seen, like we've tried to build our own. We have our own Slack channel that we like kind of integrated into chat GPT so we can like ask it questions directly from Slack and all these types of things. But like, again, invest in the people or the strategy of it is going to get you way better results than having a $5,000, $10,000 a month SaaS product.
In closing, JJ, I'm really interested in this storytelling aspect. It's coming through so much in this episode, and I'm thinking about how you learn, and I appreciate some of this is natural for some people, this storytelling aspect, but the way you broke it down just a moment ago, really good logic techniques and reflection techniques, encouraging people to take a step back, think through their expectations step by step, and then document them in some kind of story format. It sounds like that is pretty natural to you. But do you have any favorite storytellers in marketing and business, people that you look to that, now, maybe what you're talking about today on this episode, maybe their content resonates with you because it's very similar.
Yeah, I think for me, I really enjoy people that are kind of non-conventional in the sense of like their storytelling abilities. One of my favorite books to read from a storytelling perspective, which is very like, I guess, counterintuitive, is the book Never Split the Difference by, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on his name.
Chris Voss.
But the book, yes, Chris Voss. The storytelling in that, even though it's not a storytelling book, right? Yeah. If you read the book with the lens of storytelling, phenomenal. I love it because every single kind of case study he breaks down is a story of either miscommunication or incorrect communication. And so that is literally what we're doing on these reporting on the reporting side is if you have incorrect communication, like you are up a creek without a paddle, like it doesn't work. You can have the most useful reporting And we've seen this happen where like you have a lot of different reporting on people. And if they don't understand where you're coming from, you're now like on their hit list.
Yeah.
And so I really, really like, I know that's not probably what you're expecting, but the, yeah, by Chris Voss, the Never Split the Difference book, because that is pretty much what happens every day in the workplace with clients, with companies, is just the breakdown of communication on the numbers, on what the numbers mean, how the numbers got there. And if you can mitigate that, like you are going to be such a better reporter, analyst, measurement, marketing, all that jazz in one.
Yeah, I think that's a great recommendation. And you're right. It doesn't come up in context of data analysis very often, that book, or, you know, you might not expect it in an episode like this. It's come up in the podcast before, maybe when discussing sales, I think, because, you know, there is a lot of content in the book that's oriented around helping people negotiate. But you're right, is that fundamentally at the heart of that book and what I've taken from that book are communication skills. And so I think there is a direct connection between what you're saying about that resource, learning from that resource, and then your ability to communicate insights, like finding the medium through which best to communicate with your client or your peers about marketing insights. So I definitely see the parallels there. JJ, it's been a pleasure talking to you on the episode today. If people want to extend the conversation, learn more about you and Media Authentic, where can they find you?
Yeah, if you are a company doing, I don't know, between $10 and $100 million in sales, mediaauthentic.com, MediaAuthentic, if you want to watch that back on 0.5 speed, that's okay, .com, and you can book a call there. If you're an agency or consultant and you're like, hey, this stuff sounds really interesting, I'd love to kind of add this to our knowledge base, we have an entire program called Better Than Data at betterthandata.com, where we kind of teach this stuff to agencies and consultants so that you can go out and improve your services by using actual actionable data. And there you go. Better Than Data, Media Authentic. Find me there or Google JJ Reynolds just about anywhere.
Wonderful. Well, listeners, you know the drill. Everything we've discussed today will be in the show notes. For now, this has been the Internet Marketing Podcast. Take care. Thanks, JJ.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.